Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Lady of the Nightmares by Kate King. Narrated by Stuart Crank and Georgia Gray. Prologue. Ambrose. Last Samhain, October. 6 months since the death of King Penveil. The dungeon was as dark as midnight, but I didn't need my eyes to see. I kept my face hidden under my hood as the guards led me down the long, rough stone hallway, the bones of rodents crunching underfoot. The stench of death and despair overwhelmed me, and the echo of rattling bars rang in my ears as we passed cell after cell. No one here was innocent. Nevertheless, their screams put my teeth on edge. In all the years I lived in the palace, I never once visited the dungeon. It was larger than I expected, and more organized than the hole in the earth I'd envisioned as a child. Rectangular chambers lined either side of the corridor, facing inward, with iron bars keeping each captive inside. Sconces on the walls held darkened lamps, the shadows adding to the prisoners' distress and confusion. The guard on my right, a human, gave a sharp tug on my arm, to no avail. I was willing to feign capture, but I refused to let them drag me. The guard on the left, a fey male, seemed to realize that. There weren't many fey guards in the palace, but clearly my brother feared I'd escape with only humans to confine me. It was a misjudgment on his part. For one thing, this fey guard posed little threat. But for another, I was in no hurry to escape. I wanted, no, needed to be here. Deep down, I suspected Sion knew that, just as I suspected that he knew I meant to be caught, if not precisely how it happened. Outside the dungeon, at this very moment, the city of Everlast was burning, just as I knew it would, just as I predicted it must. 2 hours ago, I'd stood in the center of the town square, nearly alone in the chaos. Though it was well past midnight, the square was neither quiet nor deserted. Bright orange flames licked up the sides of houses and shops, catching in the thatched straw of rooftops and colourful cloth of flags hanging overhead. The shouts of my nightmares rang out, mingling with the screams of the villagers as they ran from their houses, clutching whatever belongings they could carry. I winced as I spotted a human woman carrying a child, running down a nearby alley into the night. We weren't here for the humans. We were here because of them. We came to punish my kind, the High Fae who lived in the city. Those without noble titles, but with 10 times the strength of those they oppressed. For those who either turned a blind eye to the rot festering in the country of elsewhere, or who revelled in the decay. We came to attract the attention of my estranged family, who grew too complacent, who forgot what true misery was. And we came because I'd seen it, because I knew we would. A phantom sensation pulled at the nape of my neck, like a thread luring me in another direction. I shook it off. Riven elbowed me in the ribs.
What was that?
I glanced over at my friend and grimaced. After all these years on battlefields, he knew me too well, and always recognized when I'd had a vision, when the thread of some other future tried to pull me in another direction. I wanted to say nothing, but it was impossible. Instead, I said, nothing we need to concern ourselves with. Riven stood rigid, shoulders back, as he always did. It was partially the armor breastplate he wore that forced him to stand that way, but he was always intense, regardless. It was one reason we became friends in the first place, if I was honest. He reminds me of my brother. He ran a hand over the tattoos covering his shaved head and looked sideways at me. His green eyes flashed.
What does that mean?
It means I already made my choice. There's no time to change it now. There were many times, this being one of them, that I wished I was born with any magical affinity aside from prophecy. Prophecy was never altogether certain. There were endless branches on the tree of life, infinite threads on the spider web, each with varying likelihood of occurring. Pluck one thread, and the vibration would spawn new webs until the end of time itself. Riven crossed his arms over his chest and opened his mouth again. No doubt he intended to argue with me. Before he could, however, something flashed out of the corner of my eye. The shadows between two houses rippled like dark water, and I blinked a few times. I threw a hand up to stop my friend from speaking. After a moment, the darkness shifted and reformed. A male emerged from the alley and advanced toward us. Beside me, Riven reached for his blade. I closed my eyes for the briefest moments. In most of my visions, it was my cousin Bale stepping out of the alley, shaking shadows off his hair like snowflakes. Of all outcomes for this meeting, that was the most likely and least violent. Interesting choice of monocle, he would say, glancing at Riven. Not the choice I'd make, but to each their own preference. And what choice would you make, cousin? I'd ask.
I don't know. I'm merely saying that if I could never be left alone, I might use that to my advantage.
I'd roll my eyes. It might shock you to know that I don't enjoy the company of tavern whores as much as you do, cousin. Of course, Bale didn't yet understand the value of good friends over good sex. Not yet, at least. He was still too young, and no one had yet given him any reason to change. The corner of Bale's lip would turn up in a smirk, completely unashamed.
Fair enough.
But none of that mattered. Evidently, I'd miscalculated, because it was not Bale who stepped out of the shadows and fixed me with a withering silver stare.
Hello, brother.
How does it feel to know you'll die down here? The human guard sneered at me, shaking me from my reverie.
I jerked, blinking several times, and assessed him as he pushed me into a cell and slammed the door. I typically liked humans and fought for their rights in elsewhere, but this man was unmistakably the exception to the rule. His ruddy face and cruel, beady eyes spoke of one with a small amount of authority in a lightweight arena. Sadly for him, his future was as bleak as his appearance. I could ask you the same, I said lightly.
What's that supposed to mean?
He spat. I opened my mouth to answer, and closed it again, as another prickle of awareness tugged at the back of my neck. Not a vision, but certainly a presence. I looked to the side, as if there were someone in my cell with me. But that was absurd. The guard looked at me with a mean smile, probably thinking I was already going mad. I ignored him. It wasn't that. Not yet, anyway. It was something else. The guards walked away down the corridor, the echoes of their footsteps and voices growing quieter with every breath.
I'm not sure it's really him,
the human said, his voice carrying back to me.
Does anyone even know what the Doulahan looks like without his mask?
It's him, you fucking idiot, the Fey guard replied under his breath.
I'd get my affairs in order if I were you.
What are you on about? I've worked in this palace for nearly 2 centuries. More than long enough to remember when the prince left and changed his name. Believe me, that's him. They moved away, their voices fading, and with them, so did my only means to see. I now stood, frozen in the dark, as blind as any mortal for the first time that I could remember. I sank onto the ground, prepared to fall into silent meditation for the coming weeks. As a prophet, I could not see myself, and therefore always travelled with a companion. But the other prisoners were too mad and too far away to be suitable subjects to see through. I'd known that I would be mostly blind for these weeks until my brother came to find me. Leaning my head back against the filthy stone wall, I closed my eyes and tried to even out my breathing. The gentle sound of breathing and the faint rhythm of a heartbeat on the other side of the stone sent a shockwave through me. Sucking in a breath, a faintly familiar scent reached me through every other foul smell clouding the air. My eyes widened, my heartbeat speeding up. It was impossible, and yet there she was. The source of my weakness, the source of that faint hum of awareness, the source of everything. Right here, in the dark. Part 1. Monsters and Prey. Chapter 1. Sion. The Obsidian Palace. Everlast City. Present. She wasn't even fucking here, and Lonnie Skyborn's loathsome presence was ruining my life. Like a virus, she'd seeped into every aspect of this castle, waging silent war on everything she touched. The monarchy, my family, my tower. She'd even tainted this damn room. In another life, I might have held council meetings in this room, but not now. Now I sat, nearly catatonic, staring down at the gleaming black steps that led to the obsidian throne. It was the throne that had once belonged to my grandmother, and should now belong to me. The throne that, like so much else, remained just out of reach. The throne that Lonnie Skyborn ruined with her mere existence. By the source, if this was how my legacy was to end, I only hoped history did me the kindness of forgetting my name altogether. How is she? Gwydion's voice rang hollowly through the echo-filled room. My head lurched up so quickly that the bones in my neck cracked.
What's that supposed to mean?
How's Lonnie doing? Gwydion repeated, at twice the volume. What else would I mean? If we can't be there to watch, we may as well get updates. I growled low in my throat, unable to find the words to express my frustration. Now she was ruining my cousins, too, and every infernal conversation. Gwydion, tall, curly-haired and muscular, rested on a bench against the far right wall, absent-mindedly oiling the silver blade of his sword. His brother, Bale, paced up and down the long, cavernous room, exhibiting every bit of agitation that I felt. Their sister, Anya, lay on the floor to my left, staring up at the ceiling, so still she could have been sleeping. Does it fucking matter how she's doing? I snapped. Gwydion chuckled, ignoring my challenging glare.
Yes, actually, it does matter. Unless you want to start over with a new queen.
Or king, Anya muttered, her eyes still closed. It's irrelevant, I barked. That's not going to happen. She's fine. She'd better be fine, after all the threats I'd made to keep her so.
Bale made a derisive noise in the back of his throat as he paced by me at top speed.
You sound quite certain.
I ignored him. Anything I said would only start another argument. In any case, I was certain that Lonnie would survive the hunts for two reasons, neither of which I was happy about. First, unbeknownst to my family, I'd sent my pet raven, Quill, to watch her. He was circling the quarry now, and should something happen, I would know. Second, it was only days ago that I'd murdered a group of bandits who'd snuck onto our grounds to attack her. I'd spared one, only to make sure he spread word far and wide that the Queen was not to be touched. I wasn't yet sure what I wanted to do with her, but until I decided, no one hurt Lonnie Skyborn. She belonged to us, and if anyone was going to kill her, it was damn well going to be me. But I couldn't say any of that. Bale had spent the better part of the evening with his eyes rolled into the back of his head, ignoring all of us as he watched Lonnie's progress in the hunt. Clearly, if anything went wrong with the little human queen, he'd leave for Inbetwixt in an instant. As long as I'd known him, Bale had never cared so much about anything. She was fucking ruining him.
So?
Gwydion asked, jerking me from my musing.
How is she?
Bale dragged both hands through his reddish blonde hair and paced faster, nearly breaking into a jog.
The same. She's nearly at the top of the hill on the south side of the quarry. She had the good sense to bring a lantern this time, and there are some underfey with her.
That's strange,
Gwydion said.
What is?
I asked, too quickly.
Humans can't see the underfey. Why would they follow Lonnie if she doesn't even know they're with her?
Admittedly, that was strange. Just another thing to add to the ever-growing list of Lonnie Skyborn's suspicious behaviour. There was far too much about that woman that wasn't right. It was more than her unusual smell and the way her skin tasted like magic. It was everything. How my power had no effect on her. And she'd survived a year in a dungeon literally built to drive mortals insane within days. How she seemed to waver between almost unbelievable naivety and a brashness that should have gotten her killed years ago. How she'd clearly brought my cousin over to her side in only a few short weeks. Everything.
How far is she from the boundary?
Anya asked. Oh, not you too, I muttered. Can we speak of nothing but the Sluer?
I don't know, Bale answered his sister, as if I hadn't spoken.
Perhaps a mile?
I made the mistake of looking over at Bale, and my stomach lurched as I watched his right eye roll backward, spinning in his skull as if he were looking for something just out of reach. I fucking hate it when you do that.
The walls around us seemed to sigh, and every shadow shuddered. Bale blinked, his eyes returning to their usual yellow, as he fixed me with a mutinous glare.
Why? Jealous?
Hardly, I scoffed. Revolted, perhaps. I'd never be jealous of such blatantly unseelly magic, not when it was what kept my cousin out of the running for the throne. As if reading my mind, Bale rolled his eyes again, showing me the whites.
I think perhaps you don't like reminders of darkness in what's left of your gleaming court.
What the fuck? That wasn't it at all, and he knew it. He'd been like this all day, skulking, agitated, easily startled, and it was driving me to the point of homicidal ideation. If you are so intent on leaving, don't let me stop you.
It was your idea to stay in the first place, he snapped. Getting cold feet?
No, I retorted.
I'm simply beginning to regret asking you to join us. Uncharacteristically, Bale didn't snap back with any sort of insult. He barely seemed to be listening. I said I wouldn't go unless I was called for.
Careful, Bale,
Anya said lightly.
You are dangerously close to making Sion sound like the reasonable one in this family by comparison, and I dare say if we stoop that low, we may never recover.
Fuck off!
I glared at her before shifting my attention back to Bale.
Why the hell would you say that?
The source only knows, he groaned, fading slightly at the edges. I'm going down to my chamber.
I cannot stand this anymore.
I sighed heavily, watching as he disappeared into nothingness. I'd wanted Bale here, in the event of an attack, and assumed it was only because I'd asked that he wasn't already by Lonnie's side. Anya and Gwydion were far from useless, but neither would be half as helpful as he would. Still, with half his attention focused on the hunt, and his mood more erratic even than my worst days, I'd almost rather see my cousin off myself.
How will we know what's happening now?
Gwydion griped. I stood, agitated. If all we're going to do is watch from here, we may as well have gone hunting after all.
I don't know why we didn't.
Of course he doesn't.
Far be it from me to expect anyone to give a shit about this country, or pay half a mind to anything going on outside their own ass.
Because, I said, struggling to hold in my frustration, we were attacked last night. Rebels infiltrated the castle without anyone having any goddamned idea how they got in.
And also, because it was a highly convenient excuse to explain away my ambivalence toward hunting Lonnie at all. But I couldn't very well tell him that. A half-truth was better than no truth at all, I supposed.
I know, Gwydion said. I'm not daft.
I grunted in mild disagreement. It was either that, or he was doing an exceptionally good job of pretending to have no fucking idea of what was going on. I wasn't sure which was worse.
Then you should understand the problem. There have been rebels in the village for weeks, growing in numbers every day. Now they get into the castle the night before we will all be out of the city. It would be the perfect time to seize the capital.
Oh, that's what they want you to think,
Anya suggested.
Maybe they're attacking in betwixt instead.
I shook my head. I thought of that, but the risk is still too great to ignore.
What about Lonnie?
Gwydion asked. What about her? I ground out.
You seem to have had quite a change of heart, Sai. Wasn't it only yesterday you were trying to kill Lonnie yourself?
Sooner even than that.
It's more important to guard the capital, I replied,
all too aware that I hadn't really answered his question. With any luck, he really was daft and wouldn't notice. I hadn't yet told anyone about my visit to the dungeons, the advice I'd received from Ambrose, or the bargain I'd made to get it. Even now, I was already beginning to regret the decision, and my rebel brother had only been free for a matter of hours.
There's more than one way to become king, Ambrose had told me. You could simply marry the queen.
I ran both hands through my hair. I'd had barely a few hours to consider it,
less than a day before I'd had to decide whether to kill her. And I had to admit, the excuse of an impending attack could not have come at a better time. Now, at least, I had another 2.5 weeks before we travelled to Nevermore, in which to decide if I would take my brother's advice. I left Anya and Gwydion and made my way downstairs. Bale's room was once located in one of the towers, alongside the rest of us, but he'd moved down alongside the kitchens at some point over the last decade, while I'd been away. I supposed it was easier to hide the cage and avoid the visitors I knew he despised. Out of respect for my cousin, and a desire to avoid further infighting, I walked down the many flights of stairs, rather than shadow-walking directly into his room. It was absurdly rude to do so anyway, but Bale revelled in rudeness, except when it came to what he considered to be his territory. Trespassers did so at their own risk. Finally coming to a halt in front of the plain wooden door set into the stone wall of the basement corridor, I knocked 3 times. There was a long silence where I could picture my cousin, golden-haired and almost cherubic-looking, rolling from his bed within the enormous bronze cage to open the door. Sure enough, the door cracked open, and one yellow eye peeked out. "Whatever it is, Si, it can wait." I wanted to ask if he was all right, but what came out instead was, "What the fuck is wrong with you?" Ah, well. He should know he'd been a prick. Bale let out a harsh laugh. "Should I read into that? Or just assume this is your usual aggression showing?" "You're the one acting like a damned lunatic," I growled. "If we are attacked, at this rate you'll be no help." His lip curled. "This wouldn't have anything to do with last night, would it?" I tensed. Last night? Which part? Did he know already what I'd done? No, impossible. So, he could only be referring to the hours before I'd gone to visit my brother. The revel. Unbidden, an image of her rose to my mind. Of her mouth falling open in ecstasy. Her syrup-coloured eyes finding mine over Bale's shoulder. I blinked, trying to banish the image, only for it to be replaced by her wild red hair covering her bare skin in that torn dress. Fuck. I swiped an angry hand across my face, as if I could wipe the image away. "I don't give a fuck what you do with her." His eyes widened, seeming slightly surprised. Him and me both, if I was honest. I hadn't realised I didn't care what he did with her until I said it. So if I wasn't jealous of Bale, what was bothering me? A question to be considered later. Much later. Perhaps never. Seeming mollified, at the very least, Bale opened his door slightly wider. "I take it you want to come in?" "Well, given that I no longer have a bedchamber thanks to you, yes." My tone softened, ever so slightly. "But if you would prefer not?" He moved out of the way, so I could step over the threshold.
"It's fine."
The moment I entered, the scent of honey and magic hit me, so strong it was almost overpowering. "You let her in here?" He narrowed, cat-like eyes on me.
"Is that what you want to talk about?"
I paused. "Yes, and no." I strode across the room to step within his enormous cage, which took up 2/3 of the chamber, housing all the furniture. I remembered when it was first built, and the ones that had preceded it that had not been strong enough. Taking a seat on a chair in the corner, which I noted had a claw mark on the seat, I said, "What else should I want to talk about?" Bale leaned against the cage bars, kicking one foot over the other casually.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?